members of the committee conducting the interview are here. Their names appear in front of them. So we invite you to briefly tell us as to why you want to consider you the position of commissioner, human rights commissioner. And again, briefly just indicate to us your experience. In particular, we are interested in your experience with regard to human rights. And of course, you might want to highlight as to what impact you think you would have on the commission if you were to be appointed. And for the rest, we will be asking questions after, in the course of that, if you clarify questions. Would prefer that you become very direct in answering questions, not over elaborate, but at the same time, don't cut yourself too short. First, if you're over elaborating, I'll intervene and suggest that you summarize certain points. So, we don't have a lot of time. Thank you very much. You can press the mic there and then start by introducing yourself, and we're ready.
Honorable Chair, my name is L.C. Fenish Mashamo. I am currently serving within the Defence Force, and I was nominated for the post, and I accepted the post. My experience within the human rights environment is my long history within the liberation struggle. I was an activist during my early days in the 70s, and I went to exile where I joined the liberation struggle, representing the youth of our country, the women, and the labor movement, addressing the issues of human rights violation in South Africa and internationally, looking at the common things that we share as nations and deciding on the way forward on how we are going to address the injustices of the past so that all of us as a nation, both in South Africa, Africa as a region, and internationally, do not go back to the past. And with that, then I accepted the nomination because I will be continuing with whatever I have been doing in the past 33 years in my life, and also looking at the current young democracy of our country, that we still have a lot to do. A lot has been done in terms of coming up with the National Action Plan to address human rights issues, to protect our democracy and to make sure that we respect each other as a nation. I feel I still have a role to play in contributing to empower our generation, make sure that we still align our policies with whatever, as a nation, we build and maintain that to ensure that we all respect each other and we enjoy our democracies from all walks of life.
Thank you.
Good morning and welcome to Parliament. Ms. Masangu, is that correct? Ms. Masangu, yes. Could I just first ask you, in general terms, should you be elected or should you be nominated as a commission and make it to become a commissioner, how do you see the relationship between the Human Rights Commission and the executive on the one hand, and the Human Rights Commission and Parliament on the other hand. And why I ask you that question is, obviously we are very aware of poverty, unemployment, housing, education, which are those second generation rights. And one of the Commission's tasks is to get reports from government departments on how they are recommending and how they are promoting those rights. And they've been in the ad hoc committee. Have you, firstly, can I ask you to respond that whether you've read the ad hoc committee, the ad hoc Kayla Asmar report, that refers to the point that the executive are very tardy in responding to reports on the progressive realization of those rights. And secondly, the thousands of complaints that are laid with the commission relating to various aspects that the executive is also very tardy in responding to that. How would you as a commissioner respond to that aspect, and how do you also see your relationship with Parliament? And then lastly, as a member of the National Defence Force, how do you see the issue, the recent issue of the strikes that took place outside the Union buildings from a human rights perspective? Thank you very much for that.
In terms of responding to issues, I think government and other departments, there is no agency because of not enough education. I think as the commission, we would have to focus on that, make sure that we educate and inform the relevant departments. With that, people who are informed, and make sure that also we implement measures and mechanisms to monitor constantly whatever we require from the different clients that we are engaged with, we can achieve our objective. In terms of what is currently happening within the organization in the defense, the ministry has responded positively in that. Again, it is lack of communication from top leadership to the troop at the end of the day. If we were able to address all of those issues, because the issues that they are raising are issues that are known, that are not only common to the department, but they are also common within government as a whole. But we have a responsibility, and within the commission, I feel we need to start there and go back to the grassroots and remind our people to be responsible and communicate. No, I did not.
Okay. And then just on the role, you mentioned that the executive really engaged, and that obviously there is a problem. If the report is asked to do, there is a severe problem in the department responding to an engagement is taking place in a number of cases of these things. And the commission is sitting with a problem in that regard. So would you
the strict measures that we should put in place should also include having strict measures within the department, finding them, because if we let departments not to comply, we won't be able to achieve what we want to see for our country.
Mr. Shangri, welcome. It is clear from your CV furnished to us that your background is in military and medical matters. And I would like to find out what your knowledge or your commitment to human rights is as contained in the Bill of Rights, because the work of the Human Rights Commission is to promote, protect and monitor those rights. And it seems to me that your particular background doesn't speak directly to that, and that's why I now want to give you an opportunity to persuade me otherwise. For example, your entire background, you've made it very clear, was in the liberation movement. But that does not, of course, automatically translate into a proven track record on human rights. For example, I see that apart from working as an administrative assistant in Lusaka, where you seem to have run a typing pool for various departments, apart from that, you also did the work of a medical officer at the Luanda ANC mission and rendered medical support to the ANC community, Swapo and Zapo. Now, we all know that there were human rights violations in the ANC camps in Angola and elsewhere, and we know that on the strength of the internal investigatory reports commissioned and conducted by the ANC itself. So please address me on that, whether you had any knowledge or experience of human rights violations in the camps. If so, what did you do about them? And then secondly, can you give me a sense of what the depth of your knowledge is about human rights outside the particular military medical background? I could offer you a few issues to ask for your comments. Perhaps you want to speak to us about what has happened to Castor Semenya, but do it from a human rights perspective and tell me what you think human rights could do in respect of that unhappy case. But please give me a sense of A, your commitment to human rights in the past, B, what your understanding is of human rights now, what the Commission would do, and please specifically tell me what your position was on human rights violations in the past in the ANC.
Yes, my CV talks of my history in the military and in the medical field. But we all know that within those spheres, we deal with people. And people have their own issues. Looking at the right first to medical care, the right to life, and as a medical practitioner, primarily you look at those and ensure that the people are protected against those important social economic rights. Within the military, again, we have people who, both men and women, that we look at the labor practices within the defense forces or the liberation struggle, and whatever we do, that their environment, their life and protection are protected. As one of the members of all of those structures, my responsibility was to ensure that their rights and the individual rights are protected. In terms of the violation that you are referring to in the camps, I was not in any camp where there were human rights violations. I personally worked as a medical practitioner where we evacuated the casualties who were injured, also assisting not only South Africans in Angola, but the Namibians and the local community when it came to medical, and that's how I understood spreading the boundaries and looking outside of the South African community in terms of supporting and looking at issues that affect people as a whole. In terms of your last comment on what has happened to our young athlete, it is a pity that people are judged by the newspapers when the matter is still being deliberated upon and the results are not known. But again, it is not up to us to judge any individual. We must respect what people are saying, and again, it is, that's why I say we need to empower our people and educate them to remind them that we are all equal before the law. And we are all in this world for a specific reason. What has happened to Semenya, I think will be addressed and the world will know. We just need to support her as a nation and to say she is not the only one. Even when we went back to our athlete, Zola, but there were also issues. It has been a trend, but what are we saying as a nation to also look at the sport environment and say what is happening? Are they adhering to the human rights issues? Are there policies in place to protect our athletes?
What could the Human Rights Commission do arising from the Kansas Semenya case? What proposals could you make? What legislative proposals? What other interventions would you as a Human Rights Commissioner undertake? Something more specific than saying we need to support her as a nation.
The legislation is in place. South Africa is a signatory to a lot of conventions, and we have, as a country, policies. We have our constitution. We need to refocus in our policies and our regulatory framework and make sure that we implement what is there. Monitor. As the Human Rights Commission, we must ensure that we monitor, control, assess, and review what has not happened.
Thank you, Chair. Kusuzana Mashang, welcome. I've got just two questions for you. The first one is, you will agree with the panel that personality plays a crucial role in determining your success or failure in any endeavor in life. Please tell us about your strengths and weaknesses. The second question, in my view, the work of the Human Rights Commission is 24 hours, which implies that most of the time, or all the time, you'll be under extreme pressure. How would you handle that pressure? Are you able to work under extreme pressure?
I will start with the last question. My experience in the Defence Force of 33 years, I have that experience to be on call 24 hours as a soldier. I was also called to be here and I responded to that call because this institute represents one of our highest institutes that advise the president of this country, and as citizens, we have to be ready to serve. In terms of my strength, I come from a rich country, our country, South Africa, and South Africa prepared me through education and experience in our diversity to grow and understand what is happening around the world, and that has complemented my other experiences outside of the country. And I am committed to this country, and that is my strength. In terms of my weaknesses, I'm not sure if I have any. I have don't focus on my weaknesses, I would not be able to respond to that one.
Could I just follow up on the last answer? Do you condemn that in this world that perfect human beings have got no weaknesses? Because you said you don't have any weaknesses. Could you elaborate on that?
I said I do not focus on the weaknesses, and therefore I'm not sure if I can budge on what my weaknesses are. But in life, not everybody is perfect.
Are you short-tempered or long-tempered? Can you tell us about your character, something about your character?
I am a people's person, a good listener, a long-tempered.
My name is just good morning, first of all. If I look at your CV, your whole involvement, particularly since 1996, has been with the military. Why are you wanting to change? Why are you particularly interested in being on the Human Rights Commission?
As much as Human Rights Commission, the commission itself deals with a specific issue within a certain environment. But in our society, issues that the Human Rights Commission as a commission looks at, the prevalence throughout. In the military, we have youth forums, gender forums, that we address specific issues that under one umbrella of human rights will say, yes, those are some of the issues that are there in the defense force. So for me, the 33 years or so that I have been in the military, I have also been looking at issues of the community, participating in community. The military, we are involved in peacekeeping missions where we deal with community, negotiate, ensure that the issues of human rights are addressed. For me, it would be still working within the environment. The only difference would be I would be out of uniform. Also, I think bringing the discipline, the military discipline, outside the military would be an advantage.
Ma'am? Okay. Hello. It's better sitting here. I have three questions for you, ma'am. My first question is, what legislation governs the functioning of the South African Human Rights Commission, and what would you consider to be the main weaknesses in these pieces of legislation? My second question is, what is your view about our equality courts? And then my last question, do you think the South African Human Rights Commission should do any investigation into the death of the six robbers of yesterday?
Can you repeat the second question for me?
What is your view about the second question? What is your view about our equality courts?
Is governed by our constitution. The Human Rights Commission Act, as well as the Human Rights Bill. In terms of the robbers yesterday, I would apologize to the House that I missed the news. I was in the flight until very late, but that is not an excuse. I cannot answer that question.
then my second question about the equality courts.
We also still need to work on our court system as a whole. We have tried in the 15 years as the nation, we would not say we are perfect. There are areas that we must still look at in terms of transformation and addressing some of those issues. We cannot say we are there yet. We are still a young democracy.
I just wanted to do a follow-up. You did not address the second part of my first question, which dealt with the weaknesses of those pieces of legislation. And then can you explain what is the procedure that one needs to follow if you want to approach the equality courts? What are the weaknesses in those pieces of legislation that you have mentioned? You did not answer that question. And then the second question, a follow-up on the equality courts was, what is the procedure that one needs to follow if you want to approach the equality courts?
The weaknesses, the legislations do not have any weaknesses currently, but they need to be reviewed. Every piece of legislation, we must have at least every year to review what we need to improve. And I think that is what the commission, one of the mandates of the commission should be looking at some of the pieces of legislation that governs us. How do we review and advise on where they should be amended?
Good morning, Madam. First of all, my apology for my late.
Sorry,
I said, can I not answer to that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, my apologies for the late arrival. The police thought to help the commuters of this town by establishing roadblocks on the main street. So, I want to join also in thanking you for being here and welcoming you. Your resume shows a great deal of dedication to the country, compassion, and qualification for which one cannot but praise you and admire you. The issue that we are dealing with here is what qualifies you for this specific job. And there is nothing in your resume that even remotely suggests that you will be qualified for directing a specialized institution which deals with human rights. But qualifications do not come from resume alone. I mean, I pride myself on being quite a good historian, but there is nothing on my resume which suggests it. So what we are trying to do here, I guess, is to probe the depth of your knowledge, because you will be appointed a director of an institution, if that comes from other sources. And on that line, Madam, if I may, I want to ask you, the main challenge facing the Human Rights Commission in the next stage will be better defining the degree of enforceability of second generation human rights. A right is not a right unless you can sue on it. So there will be need of developing thresholds to determine at what point the unfulfillment rather than the breach of a second generation human right is judicially enforceable. What steps will you take to prevail as a commissioner to make that happen? And the second question I meant to ask you is that in the response to to the question put to you by the Honorable Professor Ndabandaba, you made a statement that you are here because you have been called on serving on this commission. So if you can provide us some clarity on who called you and for such an important task that you're obliged to come. Thank you very much.
In terms of the nomination, a person is nominated by an institute and an organization, or a member nominates themselves. In my case, I was nominated by the African National Congress, and I accepted the nomination. And I don't have an objective to that because I have served the African National Congress. I am still serving the African National Congress. In terms of my background and my participation within the human rights, the housing for military veterans and the submission to the minister in 2007, I was party to that because we looked at one of the basic rights for our people is right to shelter. And in terms of all our regulations and agreements during the integration of the former forces, there were issues of entitlement that some of the veterans must also be entitled to issues that they did not benefit in due to their sacrifices. Housing was one of them, medical services and the others, and I participated fully in that. In terms of your first question on the regulatory framework as well, you are saying, in my opinion, how would I participate? I am stressing again that we need to revisit our policies, look at the gaps, how do we improve. Our National Action Plan of Human Rights was developed in 1998 for a period of 3 years. It has not been reviewed. The new commission, I think, when the first thing they come to the office to look at the gaps, look at what has happened within our organization and our structure in terms of restructuring. We have seen in the new ministries are also addressing expansion within the ministry and changing names to address what we have not been able to look at, trying to make sure that we address our regulatory framework and adhere to service delivery.
Would you be prepared to summon government to come and answer for failure to deliver services to the people? Would you be prepared to do that as a commissioner?
That is part of what the Human Rights Commission must do. It is one of its functions.
And would you be prepared to, if government fails to respond, to force them to respond?
Yes,
as a member of the commission.
That is the responsibility of the commission.
Thank you, Chair. I apologize for coming late. I was assured by the secretary that we're starting at 9 up at 9. I noticed. Yeah, That's a follow-up on the question that you've been asking as well. In your understanding, do you believe that the commission that is still in existence has been doing that, has been effective enough to ensure government delivers on what it's supposed to deliver in the view of the commission? And secondly, in your understanding, has the commission reached out to the rural communities, some of whom are the intended beneficiaries of the human rights that are found in the Constitution, and also the intended beneficiaries for the work of the Commission. Lastly, on this matter of cultural rights, R-I-T-E-S, such as circumcision, ethnicity inspection, and Utwala, what is what do you believe the commission needs to do to address the problems that arise around those practices?
The commission has done an excellent job. The problem of our country is the lack of compliance, and I think that is the only area that the commission has not been firm enough to make sure that there is accountability. And that is one area that was not addressed properly. In terms of my view on the cultural heights, our constitution says we must respect the different cultures and religion, as long as they are not jeopardizing the individual human rights, as long as they are within the law.
Yes, now theoretically that is the position, but specifically into short socialism, do you have any ideas as to how you believe the problems that arise, like for instance, injury that occurs to some of the initiates of circumcision, and the question of Ubutwala, something, what do you think about this? For instance, some of the girls that are taken to marry through this practice of Ubutwala, as they say, obviously it violates the rights of the individual, but still people maintain that in terms of the constitution they're entitled to practice their culture even in this respect. So were any ideas as well specifically do you think this needs to be addressed by the commission?
Circumcision, if it is done in a proper and healthier environment to ensure the procedure that is done properly, I respect that because that is a certain culture. It is done in hospitals where a young child who has problems will also be circumcised to medical reasons, and that it is part of circumcision that is done correctly and within the supervision of highly qualified medical practitioners. Any other circumcisions that are done within a certain culture as part of their customs, also if it is monitored and regulated to ensure that the lives of the people are protected, that is their culture and we need to respect that. In terms of your second part of your question, a child under the age of 18, that is a child. We have a responsibility to protect that child. And I think the Human Rights Commission has been firm on that, and we cannot compromise on those issues and say that is their culture. Children's rights must be protected at all times.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mashango, for presenting, and I wish you luck, and we thank you for having taken time from your busy schedule to come and interview. Thank you very much.
One question. Yes, would she prefer to be full time or part time if she were to be appointed to the commission?
Our next candidate is here, who is just getting in. I think it's Love, Janet Love. We have a difficulty with Farida Dolly. She's missed the flight. I think it's still coming, possibly. No, I don't mean for now. Yeah, she's not here. She's a friend. Leonardo Colbe, Joubert, is not coming. Oh, number five. He said, Zulman is not coming. So, minus Zulman. My name is Ngwakura Mantoni, chairperson of the committee, and I invite you to briefly tell us why you think we should consider you for membership of the Human Rights Commission. Names of the panel are in front of all of them. And then I would want you to be very brief in your synopsis, including telling us about your special focus on human rights. And we will be asking questions after that brief summary. And again, I want you to be answering questions very direct, I don't want you to be over elaborate. But don't cut yourself too short. If I think you are well prepared, I'll intervene in the interest of time. Thank you very much. Please.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. My name is Janet Love. I assume that you have my CV, so I won't spend a lot of time going through that. But my involvement in human rights issues has been, I suppose, from the involvement I had in the struggle against apartheid, and thereafter was involved in the negotiation process, which worked towards initially the interim constitution, and then later was involved in the development and the compiling of the constitution itself and the Bill of Rights. Since then, I know many of you from the time that I spent in Parliament, and hope in that capacity was able to adhere to and maintain the commitment to human rights dispensation that we had all achieved. I left Parliament spending 1 year as a ministerial advisor, but then after serving for 5 years in the Reserve Bank, have spent the remaining time working directly with human rights issues in the Legal Resources Centre, an organisation which I think has a very proud record over 30 years of standing up for the rights of individuals in South Africa. I think that that's probably enough of an introduction, because I'm sure you have your questions and your issues that you want to concentrate on. Chairperson?
Thank you very much, Honourable Sir.
Thank you, Ms. Love, and thank you for being here, and welcome back to Parliament. You've got a very impressive CV, and we all admire the work that the Legal Resources Centre does, and the involvement. I think they were also involved in the certification of the Constitution, if I remember correctly. Could I just ask you, just for a few initial comments, the CAD-ASMA report on the Chapter 9 institutions, whether you've read that and whether you are aware of a number of the shortcomings that the report identified with the Human Rights Commission, and in particular maybe the weaknesses that it's experienced in its liaison with other structures of government, the executive in particular. How do you see that relationship with the executive and with Parliament? If one looks at two particular issues, the reporting on the progressive realisation of the second generation rights from departments and the difficulty that the Commission had in getting those reports, number one. Secondly, the complaints that are laid with the Commission and that are not responded to by departments, and that frustration that has been experienced by the Commission. And thirdly, the issue that some people would say that the Commission is almost limp-wristed. Would you, coming from an LRC background as a possible Commissioner, would you litigate more? Would you take stronger action? Why is it that so many NGOs take the government to court, such as the TAC? Why is the Commission not doing that? And would you approach it slightly differently? And then the role of the Commission and Parliament, how would you see improving that? For example, how Parliament deals with all those reports. So just some general comments there. And secondly, the issue relating to your position at the moment. Would you see any conflict? Would you resign? Should you be appointed? How do you see that? Would you accept the part-time position? A few general comments. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. I'll try and cover the issues that you raised, and you'll let me know if there's something I leave out. I have gone through the report some time back when it was issued, and perused it more recently in preparation for coming here today. First of all, I think my point of departure is for us to look at what is the role of the Human Rights Commission and, as I understand it, how it was conceived of. I think it's a very different kind of institution from the institutions like the Legal Resources Centre and other organs of civil society. And it's true that the Human Rights Commission Act provides for the possibility of litigation. And I think there are very many ways in which the Human Rights Commission can pursue what ought to be, for anybody, including a civil society organization, a last resort. We all know it's very costly. So for me, what is unique about the Human Rights Commission position, which certainly in the LRC and other civil society organizations, we can't have that role, is that it has an extraordinary power in relation to being able to require information, in being able to obtain the evidence of people, both on a voluntary basis as well as on a basis of a subpoena. And in that sense, it has a huge remit that involves monitoring, oversight, reporting on, and the investigative powers that it has relate to all of those three issues. The second, for me, the second part of that is that it's, in order to guarantee the rights and the structures of the Constitution and to play its role in that regard. The Commission has a possibility of straddling without being subject to the various structures of our Constitution, which include not just the legislature, but the executive and the administration. And it seems to me that the point that I do agree with in the report is that in a way the Commission didn't fully define that role as being able to bridge some of the divide that must exist between the legislature and the executive on the one hand. And so I think it could do a lot more to do to craft its role in that regard. I do think that the question of litigious intervention is something not, you know, as I said, of last resort. And I certainly would not believe that the Commission would play a better, a more significant role in our society by increasing its litigious activities as a matter of course. I think there are various partnerships as well that the Commission ought to investigate more closely before really developing some kind of costly in-house litigious capacity when there are various partnerships that the Commission could enter into with outside counsel, outside organizations, should the need arise. But as I say, it really ought to be that the Commission's power for information really makes that need a hell of a lot less than it might in many other circumstances. Lastly, and I hope I've touched most of the other issues, the question of the frustration of the Commission in terms of getting information out of departments. It's been my experience, certainly when I was here in the legislature, that to simply write a letter to a department asking for huge volumes of information is possibly not the most focused way to go about getting that information. I accept that some departments might not be wanting or able to produce the sort of information that they should, and that's a problem that should be highlighted. But I do think that we can do more by engaging officials within the department, and particularly at the more senior levels, in order to solicit the kind of information we need, rather than simply forwarding complaints. I mean, it seems to me that there could be a mechanism that involves a whole lot more dialogue that the Commission could entertain.
Just how you see the relationship with Parliament and then the conflict of interest possibly, and if I can add a last little question, your tenure at the Reserve Bank, I seem to recall you taking a principled stance on an issue there to the end. Maybe you could just touch on briefly, very briefly, on what occurred there that ended your relationship with the Reserve Bank. Thank you.
I'll start with that one. My relationship with the Reserve Bank at the end was very positive. What caused me to leave was the approach by the Legal Resources Centre to move across, and my huge respect for the organization over the many years, but I believe that it was something, a worthwhile thing to be involved in. And maybe following from that, the question of conflict of interest. I think conflict of interest is something that challenges us all and is not something that either exists or doesn't exist. It's something that we have to manage all the time. Notwithstanding that, I think that the work that I do within the Legal Resources Centre is hugely complementary of the kind of role and work that I think the Human Rights Commission should play. So I would very much see a synergy between the two roles and would hope that I could serve as a part-time commissioner precisely to enable that synergy to develop. The question of the parliamentary issue, I think that the Commission needs to see its role, again, not so much as being, I don't say it should never make submissions, But I think in the planning of some of its investigations, it needs to take Parliament on board. So it needs to take certain committees. Let me give you an example. We have some really tremendous work that was undertaken by the Commission around the environment that children work in schooling, in school circumstances, and real challenges that schooling environment presents. Now, it seems to me that had those terms of reference been worked out in some depth and detail with the relevant portfolio committee and committee and the committee of the NCOP, that you would have had the selection portfolio committees being able to take forward many more of the issues that need to be taken forward that possibly are not the kinds of things that are within the remit of the Commission, per se, to take forward on its own. And so I think there should be a much closer collaboration in some of its reports. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I think that the Commission has been probably a lot more proactive than some of the other organs of the Constitution that are there to defend our democracy. But I think possibly what it hasn't done is defined how it is different from other civil society institutions, or from civil society institutions, because it is an organ of state. How that relationship with Parliament is different, not just by definition, but must be different in terms of the actual practice.
I would like to say, before I ask those questions to you, that I greatly admire the work that the Human Rights Commission has done. Jody Collip and Leon Bessels, Carsey Govender, in particular with their reduced numbers, I think they've done wonderfully well. Especially if one remembers that their decisions or rulings have no binding effect. They're not a court of law. Their effect depends entirely on the degree of authority that they bring to bear. And they've been excellently successful. There's been a stampede for rulings, utterances, and interpretations of the Constitution in certain fields, in particular equality. The thing that South Africa insists on calling hate speech, which bears very little resemblance to what's in the Constitution. Now, having said that, there has been one area of a failure on their part, and that concerns the right to information. By the way, where they have shown a shortcoming of the kind you've just described, where a better synergy with Parliament could have wonderful results, I regret to say that, in my view, it is the Justice Committee of this legislature that was at fault. And I was not a member at the time, so it's easy for me to say. And I know how much work Justice had. But the one failure, perhaps, was in the field of the right to information, where they are supposed to inform the public about, you know, what's available, what can be achieved, and so on. It's, once again, not a failure very much of their making, in my view. And I want to ask you what your views are on this and what could be done. Firstly, they're short of commissioners. Now, there was a view that one could appoint a dedicated information commissioner in their ranks. What would be your views? That it was even costed. By contrast, there's the idea of creating an independent, separate information commissioner under a different statute who would have powers even to force a government department to give the answers which they are just not giving. So if you have an interest in this field, would you share some thoughts? And to use a particular issue, give me your idea on what has happened to our athletes in Armenia. Should it be an offence to intrude upon the genetic privacy of a person? Should we legislate for genetic privacy? This event has thrown up new questions around privacy, which is a big issue which we are about to deal with. And just lastly, perhaps some thoughts on the resurgence of the national question and the race debate. How much of it is real? How much of it is apparent or politics? And how does this relate to the quality issue and the equality courts and real people with real problems?
Thanks, Dean. Just on the first issue, I know that there's quite a lot of discussion at the moment in ensuring that the legislation at PIA is a much more effective tool for everybody. It seems to me that setting up an independent structure or even necessarily designating somebody as being the sole person to engage in PIA activities is not of the Commission, is not necessarily going to solve those problems. It seems to me that surely the Commission does need to engage both with the executive as well as with the legislature to ensure that we do find a way to cut through some of the tremendous unnecessary bureaucracy that stalls genuine access to information requests that really should not be delayed even slightly. It's tedious, it's costly, and frankly speaking, it undermines what the whole purpose of PIA was. So in the first instance, I do think that there is scope for review, not necessarily of each comma and full stop, but of just ensuring that there are, within each department, there is a much clearer designation of who can take the final decision about what kinds of requests for information and how those can be processed. And I agree that the Commission can play a very direct role in mediating or assisting with some sort of arbitration where the sort of run-of-the-mill bits of information that departments collect and shouldn't have any problem to produce, where there might be some grey areas, firstly, and secondly, how those things that are in fact going to be problematic can be distilled. So that would be my take on the sort of role the Commission can play, rather than to sort of try and do too much separation. With regard to the issues that surround Cantor Semenya, I'm not sure whether you've had any direct briefing as a committee, but I'm certainly only beholden to the press for the information that I have on the issue. And what I would say about it is that I find it hugely problematic that the issue was presented and has now remained as a highly individualized and personalized issue. For me, what the issue does is it highlights the difficulties that as a society we still have with understanding and relating to questions of gender. And so there's a whole, there are many, many other incidents relate to how gender is perceived within not just our society, but quite clearly at an international level. So I think that what has become distasteful is the fact that it has been hugely personalized in the way in which the discourse has unfolded. And I don't point fingers there. I mean, I think that it's a function of somebody who's occupied a very center page space in media, certainly, that might happen. But I think that has overshadowed some of the more fundamental issues. When it comes to the administrative justice issue of the extent to which she has been singled out by virtue of race as well as the complexity of the relationship that sporting bodies seem to have to the issue of gender, I can't easily comment on that, but it wouldn't surprise me that there has been differentiated treatment. I think the sports bodies have to get that right, that there could have been a racial element to that. It's quite conceivable to me. It doesn't mean that that's been the main issue. It isn't. I think, as I said, the main issue for me is gender and the invasion of privacy. The invasion of privacy, I think, is huge. The fact that a test could have been conducted without the consent of the athlete, I think is completely unacceptable. I think that for me, that's the whole issue around sporting bodies and their procedures and rules that needs to get sorted.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Love, you will agree with the panel that the Human Rights Commission has a mandate, and the mandate is to protect and promote human rights and the cause of human rights in South Africa. Now, should you be appointed, how do you see yourself further promoting respect for human rights and the cause of human rights in our country? That's the first question. Now, my second question to you is, you'll agree with the panel once more that all of us have got strengths and weaknesses. Now, share with the commission what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. And my last question to you, the Human Rights Commission, in my view, is a 24-hour job. It's not an 8-to-4 situation, which implies that you have to work under extreme pressure all the time as long as you are in the Human Rights Commission. Are you able to take pleasure without being off balance? Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. With regard to the first question, I think that the essence of understand of promoting human rights is understanding the diversity of the individuals that need to embrace them, and moving from that as a point of departure. It seems to me that there is a lot that can be done to ensure that people engage with all who live in our society and make up our society by promoting a lot more understanding of what the complexity is and what the different contributions that different people make. And also, I think relating that to a lot of the issues to do with the heritage and the culture of our country. So I think that one of the requirements for the Human Rights Commission is to engage with a number of other similar institutions. And possibly, for me, one of the things that didn't get picked up in the, if I can call it the Atmal Chapter 9 report, is that I think that more could be done by the Commission to engage certainly in terms of the institution that our Constitution has created, which deals with the whole panoply of cultures and the heritage that we have. So that would be, for me, something that I think can certainly be strengthened hugely. The second thing is that the question of the full range of rights that we have in our Constitution. When our Constitution is often considered by people who engage with it, they look at those rights outside of the requirement that is contained in the preamble, which is transformative. Our Constitution, aside from the rights that are stated within it as indivisible and as the whole basket of rights, is a Constitution that requires both of the state and, of course, of any component of the state to ensure that we use the understanding and the implementation of those rights to effect transformation in our country. And I think that understanding is something that really needs to be sharpened in a lot of people's minds, and we need to engage with a lot of the materials and a lot of the programs, both within educational fields as well as within our media, to make that better understood. So those are two things.
I think you are elaborating. We have taken about maybe about 30 minutes with you already. So we'll have 10 minutes, and please be precise. And also the questions we ask, we must also, from our side, be very precise. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll try then and just answer your other two questions very briefly. I have worked under pressure for many years and would be able to manage that pressure, I think. So I hope that that kind of deals. Did I leave something out?
I'm just a bit worried about your standing as a manager. You know, that I noticed that the LRC arrived half an hour late into your interview. I don't know if that's any reflection. Anyway, sorry, that was meant to be a joke. It doesn't seem to find out as well. Your CV is quite varied from maybe you can just sort of comment on it. It's meant to be a sort of positive thing. You know, from a political science sociology degree through to water, through to Reserve Bank, through to Legal Resources Center, with no formal legal training. One would imagine that variety of experience would bring quite a wealth to the HRC. I mean, again, on a light note, I don't know what your membership of the Wheat Industry Cluster Initiative, how you think that will impact on your contribution to the HRC. But anyway, aside from that, the main point I wanted to pick up on really was the issue of independence and impartiality, which I'm surprised that other members haven't picked up on, and so just to raise it in case it gets raised at a later point. Requirement in the Act and the Constitution that the members of the Commission are independent and act impartially. You've obviously, in terms of your history, got a very strong involvement with the African National Congress. How do you think, can you just respond on those issues of concerns are raised about your impartiality and your independence?
I think firstly, in terms of my record within certainly the LRC, but in other spheres as well, I think that my background and my involvement in the ANC have not precluded my independence of view and being prepared to pursue anything in that regard. I do, however, think that even though it's not a requirement of the law, it would be important to preserve the independence and the way in which the institution of the Human Rights Commission is perceived, that I would step down from any elected position in the organization, so to secure that independence. But that, of course, does not, talk about where I continue to think or be involved, because that, I think, has always been characterized by a level of independence anyway. By the way, the wheat cluster helped the competition board reach its ruling on bread prices.
Thank you. I specifically wanted to ask whether Love would stand down from the NEC of the ANC, but you've already indicated you, and any other emanations and institutions attached to your party. Are you a member of anything other than the NEC? But you would resign for the race.
Which is that from elected office, eh?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two questions. First of all, I would personally see a conflict if you were to serve part-time both as the National Director of the LRC and the Human Rights Commission. Not because the two entities are structurally in conflict, but because they do play a different role within the rich tapestry of human rights and legal entities which support the Constitution. And the differentiation of roles, I think it's important to the functioning of the machine. So that's one concern. So the question is, would you be willing to serve as a full-time member? The second, you obviously have a resume, what you said today, support the fact that it would be a great asset to the Commission. The consequent question, I look at the human rights community as an entire body which helps promoting the country in the direction of human rights protection. If you were to move from the LRC, who would replace you? Would we not be robbing one church to adorn another one with a zero sum in the overall system? And the third question, if I may be allowed to say, one of the great challenges of the Human Rights Commission, in my eyes, will be that of directing the criteria of enforceability and implementation of the second generation human rights. I tend to believe and take a little different opinion from what you said on the role of litigation. Litigation is important because it sets the clear notion that the right is now enforceable, and the right is not the right until one can sue on it. There will be need to develop criteria to determine at what point the rights, like the right of education, the right to shelter, the right to health care, give rise to an action in law. What type, and it depends on what the country can afford, the criteria of progressive realization, affordability. As a commissioner, how would you direct the Human Rights Commission to begin creating the information and the processes to bring those declarations of principles into an actual enforceable right?
Thanks, Mr. Ambrosini. First of all, have no difficulty with your view that they are two different organizations, the LRC and the Commission. At the same time, I think the point that I was making is that the organizations complement each other, precisely because the work that we do in the LRC is exactly to take to the courts issues that enable the courts to examine and pronounce on the enforceability of rights and to what extent within the context of the constraints and the whole notion of ongoing implementation of our constitution. So I see them as complementary. I would be, as a consequence of that, be thinking that it would be, in fact, adding to what the Commission would be able to do to have my involvement in the Legal Resources Centre continue. I certainly have indicated that I am putting my name forward in the context of a part-time commissioner because I think that synergy is very important. What can the Commission itself do? I think that when we're looking at taking those kinds of issues to court, as you know, the level of experience that is required to take those kinds of issues through the court process to the Constitutional Court, I think that the Commission has already shown that for the kinds of cases that become Constitutional Court cases, it in fact has to forge partnerships with outside organizations that have that experience around what you're calling second generation or socioeconomic rights. And I believe that it should do more of that. I think there are huge numbers of areas where more in that regard could be done. I think I've answered, and the chairperson might rule me out of order.
Of whether your part-time availability, is that a preference or a condition? If we very dearly wanted to make you full-time, would you?
A condition or a preference? I think that it would probably, I'd have to say that it would be a preference, but a very strongly held preference. I really want to urge you as a body to consider the fact that there is really tremendous gain that can come from that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Thank you, Jefferson. Now, one of the obvious intended beneficiaries of the Bill of Rights and the Commission are the rural communities. In your understanding of the Commission so far, has it done enough to ensure that there is awareness of these rights within those communities? And also, how many of the official languages are you able to use? And thirdly, regarding the matter of cultural practices like circumcision, like ubutwala, like virginity inspection, regarding the problems that arise around those issues, what of you as a commission, what would you like the commission to do to address the problems that arise out of those? Some people are of the view that they should simply be done away with because they violate the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and rights to privacy, and the right to health, and so on. Others believe there are certain things that need to be done, that can be done, in order to align them with the provisions of the law. So what are your views on that?
The first two questions are very short. I have the distinct disadvantage, and I think the professor, now that I remember, asked me for the big weakness. I have the distinct disadvantage of effectively being monolingual, as you know, and so I would put that on the record here. And I believe in relation to rural areas and communities that live there, to the extent that the Commission has tried to engage, I don't doubt that there's been an attempt, but I certainly don't see the effect that we should be seeing, probably because in order to work within those areas, it requires a huge emphasis and a huge prioritization of resources, and I don't think that has happened and ought to happen. With regard to the question of customary practice and law and our human rights, again, I don't want to incur the wrath of the chair, so I'll say to you that you're aware that I hold the view very strongly that customary law in South Africa is a part of our heritage, a part of our law, and it's something that is living. It's been pronounced living by our constitutional court on more than one occasion. And as part of living, it needs to be able to move and adapt in order to bring itself into line and into the context, let me put it that way, of our rights framework and our constitutional framework. And I believe that in many instances there have been shifts, and those are shifts that have come from within the communities themselves and within the traditional authorities themselves. And that's, for me, what ought to happen and what can happen.
I think we're done, the candidate. Thank you very much for presenting yourself. Good luck. Let's get the next candidate. Oh, yeah, before that, we have someone who has missed the flight. Dolly, is that Dolly? And I think we should treat her the same as the other one who missed the flight. Is that we should encourage them to come? It's too late. It's Dolly and the other one yesterday. What was the name?
Neman
as well. But we must discuss the issue. If we agree, anyway, we can discuss this Zulman thing, the Zulman, who is not here, the one with the finger raised. Or should we wait until after the next candidate? But I'd have to resolve Zoli now, because she's
Now, I just wondered, what is it we are saying that the ladies who missed the flight must drop down to the limb and we see them when we can?
I want to emphasize with us if we come or not.
Yes, and that would be unfair to exclude her because she missed the flight.
Oh, wanted to come.
Okay. And as for the judge, sir, we must have a teleconference. When we say that right at the start, when a person is abroad or unavailable, we can have a teleconference. It's to the disadvantage of the Kansas, but we can't exclude a person because he's not, can't be in Cape Town, the Kansas by far. There's another thing. May I just ask, there aren't any candidates sitting in my
there is. We're waiting for. We're bringing in one.
Room. The other candidates should not be in the room. There aren't any, are there?
Yeah, we're bringing in. No, 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 no. We're bringing in.
Thank you.